Welcome to another installment of the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. I am your host, Shelton Williams, and of course we have my special guest on here for my Saturday podcast, Seamus Pouts.
What's up, man?
What's up?
All right, man. Doing, We're doing it again. We're doing it again.
Yes, man. And how you been? You been good?
Been great, man. Been thinking about Star Wars a lot. At the time of recording right now, episode 9's coming out pretty episode 9's coming out pretty soon, man. So I'm stoked about that. I'm ready.
Okay, so what's so crazy for you guys that are listening, these people from work, because I started this journey and I caught up all the episodes, we're going to be watching that right when it comes out, episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I am officially a Star Wars fan, guys. I am officially a part of the culture.
Okay. It makes me so happy to hear that. Welcome.
Yes, man.
It's nice to like actually like have a nice healthy discussion about Star Wars every once in a while.
Yes. So
like the fact that like you became a fan within like this short period of time and you have this fresh perspective on it. I love that, man. It's great.
Dude, okay, that's so awesome. Yeah. And so today we're going to be talking about episode 5, okay? Yes. Now, also, before we get started, I was wilding, okay? I was really wilding when I rated episode 4 so high, okay? So if you listen to the last episode, I rated it a 9 because I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's so great, awesome. Okay, now that I've had time to sit with it and know the movies and know of everything, I will not give it a 9, okay? I would adjust my rating right now. I'm just adjusting it, okay? I would legitimately give that an 8, okay? I'm going to go down to an 8, even give it a 7.5 because I got to give... I think that's
entirely fair. The first movie did a lot. It really did. And a lot of establishing and everything like that. But in from what you're saying, like after seeing the other movies in the series, yeah, it does like it doesn't quite stand up to certain ones, and we'll get into which ones we're talking about.
Yes.
but yeah, that's definitely a fair rating.
Yeah, because guys, that you know, we are going to do a rating of our what we would have for our rating for which one's the best Star Wars to the least favorite Star Wars, and I have a really good idea what I'm going to put at the bottom. But anyway, I have a very good idea.
Man, I'm interested to hear this now.
But okay, so we're gonna definitely go through that. Oh, also, guys, going to be even watching the movies that are not in. That are not dealing with the Skywalkers. So, okay, so I'm going to be going through episode 1 through 9. By the time we get done with all this, we'll talk about episodes 1 through 9. I'm also going to be watching Rogue One, and also I think it's called Solo is the other one, right?
Yep. Okay. Both Star Wars stories. Yeah. Those are like the Star Wars story brand, pretty much.
Gotcha. Okay, so I'll make sure to watch those as well. I will put them also in the rating. As well, I think it's appropriate, right? We can still add those in our rating structure, you think, too?
Oh, absolutely. That'd be fine. Absolutely. Okay. Please. The more Star Wars, the better, man. Let's just do Mandalorian. Like,
Let's
do that.
Yeah. Okay, we got to do that, too. Okay, so we're going to be talking about a lot. So I'm hoping that this series could be helpful for people that are Star Wars fans. Maybe you're not. Maybe you've always been on the fence with it like I was at one time. So I hope you guys enjoy it. But also, I did not do this on the last episode. I even though I feel like we shouldn't have to do this, but I feel like at this time we have to probably say it. Spoiler alert, guys. Okay? We're going to be super spoiling these films, okay?
Spoiler alert for a movie that came out in 1980, all right?
So, exactly. Okay, so I feel like I shouldn't have to say that, but I'm sorry. I'm going to say it. Spoiler alert, guys. If you were thinking we're just going to do a general synopsis, we're not. We're going to be going, not super detailed, but we are going to be going into the movie and the films. So just sit back and relax and enjoy our take on these Star Wars films. All right.
All right. Let's do this.
Let's get to it. All right. So we end episode 4 ends with them destroying the Death Star, right?
Yeah.
So what they're the rebels, right? That's what we're, rebels, they destroy
the Rebel Alliance. Am I saying that right? Yes.
Yeah, okay, the cool. Rebel. Cool. Mm-hmm. All right, so you're going to help me with terminology because I'm still absolutely new.
That's what I'm here for, man.
Okay, so the rebels, they went and destroyed the Death Star, okay, at the end of it. Really, it was really Luke, right? Luke was the man that handled everything, right? Yep. With Leia being the one that was just kind of strategist. And
exactly.
Luke was out there actually doing it. Now, what's very interesting, and this is something I didn't mention in the last film, and I wanted to kind of have your take on it. Did you find it very interesting how Obi-Wan, and maybe I'm being way too detail-oriented about this, but when Obi-Wan was talking to Luke, he always said, like, there's only, like, most of the time when he's talking to Luke, he always said, the Force will be with you, right? And like with everyone else, it was like, may the Force be with you, may the Force be with you. But Obi-Wan made it like a point to say, like, the Force, like, you will be able to use the Force will be with you. And it was more like an affirmative and not like a, well, I hope the Force is with you, man. But Obi-Wan was like, nah, it will be. Did you ever notice that, or am I just kind of, reaching a little bit?
First of all, let me address being detail-oriented as a Star Wars fan. I feel like that's a prerequisite, so I think you're perfectly fine with that. Being detail-oriented to the point where it's annoying sometimes is just like a normal Star Wars fan thing to do. So yeah, you're good there. That's an excellent point. And let me go ahead and like bring up some trivia too as far as like the first movie. I know we're talking a lot about the first movie, but as far as like who said may the Force be with you first, it was Han Solo that said it. It was right before they went off, where Han went off and supposedly did his own thing, but then he came back and helped the Alliance. But like right before he went off in the Falcon, he told Luke, hey Luke, may the Force be with you, kind of. And if you realize, it's coming from the perspective of somebody who isn't aware of the Force, doesn't even know if he believes in the Force yet, but he was giving that, like, it was almost like, if it's real, then may it be with you. But then later on, after Luke does what he was supposed to do, it's almost kind of bookended. Like, Han saying, may the Force be with you, and then you have, Obi-Wan reaffirming that, saying, the Force will be with you, always.
Yeah.
That way, I think.
Yeah, it was something to that effect, like basically like affirming that, like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like I want, like, basically giving him the uttermost confidence that the Force will definitely be with him. And he used the Force, for the Death Star, right? To destroy it and everything like that. So I think that was really, really great. And one thing I think we talked about, it, but episode 4 is like the transformation of Luke. Like, legitimately going from a farmer to a hero.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I thought that was just absolutely amazing. And then what's so cool about that is the opening crawl, right? Or hold up. Nope.
You got it, dude.
I said it right? Okay, cool.
You are a fan. Like,
this is... So the opening crawl for this new film, The Empire Strikes Back, okay? Now... In this one, I think I have it here. Yes, I can read it to us, right? So in this new film, and this is what's really cool too, right? That we can talk about it, is the name of this one. And this was named afterwards, right? Or was this always named Empire Strikes Back?
Actually, I believe, if I remember right, Star Wars was named Episode 4 before Empire Strikes Back came out. So I believe it was always Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. And if like somebody wants to respond and like correct me, I believe that's correct.
Okay.
But yeah, that it's always been known as Empire Strikes Back, like Episode 5, awesome. Empire Strikes Back.
So Empire Strikes Back, which is awesome, right? So let's think about this for a second. So the first thing we know, because this is the first thing, because remember, I'm very, very new to the Star Wars thing. But I felt like Empire Strikes Back just the title alone gave me an idea of what this movie is going to be about, right? Yes. Because the rebels seem like in the end of it, they struck first, if you want to say that, right? So they were on the offensive in the end of episode 4, but now on episode 5, you see the Empire that's now on the offensive, like, hey, you know, we were the ones that were attacked, but now we're going to go ahead and attack you back.
Right.
And what I found very interesting is an opening crawl, which I absolutely love. It starts off by saying, okay, it's a dark time for the rebellion. Although the Death Star has been destroyed, Imperial troops have driven the rebel forces from their hidden base and pursued them across the galaxy. Invading the dreaded Imperial Starfleet, a group of freedom fighters led by Luke Skywalker. And this is what I find very great. And probably, like I said, I'm being very nerdy and very like detail-oriented with this. Is in my mind, I'm like, Luke Skywalker was like a nobody, technically, right? In the beginning of episode 4. Yeah. Like, someone that, you know, we began to learn the importance of him as the film was going on. But he basically was a nobody. But in episode 5, he's a leader. So it's very interesting with that. He's led by Luke Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
And has established a new secret base on a remote ice world of Hoth. The evil Lord Darth Vader, obsessed with finding young Skywalker, has dispatched thousands of remote probes into the far reaches of space. So just with that opening crawl, which I absolutely love, I became a Star Wars fan, looking forward to the opening crawl, okay, of the film, like looking forward to it. But it just in this alone, it just shows me how much more Luke Skywalker has grown, right?
Yes.
Like, it's still this growth of it. And am I being a little bit too detail oriented, or as you're saying, this is the point of it, Shelton. When you're a Star Wars fan, you're gonna dive deep into it.
Once you're right off the money, Shelton. The great thing about these Star Wars movies is none of them like take place one right after the other. Like, I don't think like there's a lot of time, like a varying amount of time, like with this one, I believe it's like 4 to 5 years between episodes 1 to 2, it's like 10 to 20 years. So like it gives you a lot of time for these characters to come into their own and become the new character for the new movie. And especially for this one with Luke Skywalker as well, him being, you know, leading his own group of like his own battalion basically, or his own fleet, because I think it's mostly like fighters, like, you know, mostly airborne stuff and everything. You know, it basically gives him time to grow as that leader. And you see this come to fruition in this movie as he's already kind of leading his own fleet and stuff.
Exactly, man. And that's what I found so awesome. He's leading, he's a leader, and he's going out. And so the beginning of this film, they're in this ice world. Everything is going on. It's snowing, it's all this freezing, everything's going crazy. And Luke Skywalker is like the beginning of the film, it's like his face is kind of covered, so you're not really seeing everything.
Right.
But there was a point though, as I'm looking at Luke Skywalker, I was like, I legitimately thought, because I remember when I first began to watch the opening scene, I text you or I messaged you on Facebook and I was like, did they get a new actor? Basically, I'm thinking in my head, they got a new actor to play Luke Skywalker. I'm angry, I'm upset, because this guy's face was so different, okay? And I did not realize, I was like, why did he look so different in episode 5, right? And that's something that I did not, and people who have watched Star Wars over the years, they're used to the face of Mark Hamill, because he's the face that he's had it from episode 5 all the way on through, so we're used to it, everyone's used to it. But me, a guy that's binge watching it, right, I'm being a little bit too detail oriented, but I was like, what happened to this guy's face? Okay,
yeah.
And so I googled it, right? So I'm googling it, this is me being too detail oriented, I know, but it's a good thing. I googled this up, and this is what I found out. So on January 11th 1977, Mark Hamill, who at this time is an unknown actor, he got into a car accident that fractured his nose and left cheekbone.
Wow.
All right. Now, if the accident, this is what the article says, and this is an article from Business Insider, this article came out on October 26, 2015. Okay. So I'm just letting you know about this too. So this is what it says. If the accident had happened 4 months later, the news would have been in every paper around the world. But at the time, Hamill was still an unknown actor who had just finished being the lead in a yet-to-be-released sci-fi movie in which he wore all white and wielded a glowing sword. Hamill had to have cartilage taken from his ear to rebuild his nose. Okay?
Wow.
Yeah, this is crazy. But when Star Wars A New Hope opened on May 25th, 1977, breaking box office records and making everyone involved, especially Hamill as Luke Skywalker, overnight sensations, little attention was made about Hamill's accident. However, when the sequel to A New Empire, 1980's The Empire Strikes Back, it opened with Skywalker being mauled in the face by a Wampa, okay, or a Wampa, whatever, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but his face gets hit. Fans speculated that the scene was written because Hamill's face looked different after his accident.
That's really interesting.
Yes. All right. Isn't this crazy?
Okay. This goes back to why it's awesome that, you know, you're coming at this from a fresh perspective, just like watching these movies for the first time. I had never, like you said, like as somebody who's watched the movies and basically been aware of the movies my entire life, I had never noticed that. I had never noticed that his face was like markedly different. But then after we had that that text conversation, I went back and watched Empire, and yeah, it's way different. Like, it's a very different look, and it's just like I couldn't believe, like, wow, like if I had been watching this movie for the first time, he just looks like a completely different person.
Like, exactly. So I legitimately thought he was I legitimately thought this guy has got this is a new actor. They got a new actor. Yeah. I was mad. I was really upset.
But don't worry, it's still Mark Hamill. He's still doing his thing.
Yes, man. So this is interesting. So this is the first thing, and now it's been speculated that the very first scene, that scene was used to cover up the fact or to allow the audience to understand different, okay? Yeah. In episode 5, right? To kind of show it, to put, you know, put emphasis on it that this is what happened, right? But it's been speculation. Now, George Lucas said that wasn't the case, okay? Okay, so let's go. Let me go actually keep reading on here. Hamill said in an interview that the next day he was supposed to do pickup shots for New Hope of scenes on Tatooine. Is that where he was from, right, again?
Yep, Tatooine, right. Yep.
Now, this led to director George Lucas having to use a double, though the shots were for scenes where you wouldn't see his face, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, his accident did not affect the completion of A New Hope, but the question is, did it alter The Empire Strikes Back? Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, this is where the story gets a little hazy, okay? This is where the story, people are back and forth with it. George Lucas says that the Wampa scene helped justify him as Luke to viewers, but suggests the scene wasn't written because of his accident. At the end of A New Hope, he had been in a car accident, and this is what George Lucas said. He had been in a car accident, and knew Mark was going to look a little different than he was in the first films. But my feeling was some time had passed. They'd been in the rebellion fighting, so the change was justifiable. Now, there's a scene in the film where Mark gets beat up by the monster, which helps even more. But there wasn't really the meaning of why we wrote the monster in the beginning. Right. We needed something to keep the film suspenseful at the beginning while the Empire is looking for them. Okay? So he says it kind of helps, but it wasn't written in the story because of his accident. That's what George Lucas says. But Carrie Fisher says something entirely different. Okay?
Interesting. I love Carrie. Like, I'll get on a whole thing about Carrie Fisher later on, but I love Carrie. Oh, yeah, keep going.
Oh, yeah, we can definitely, you know what? We can talk about Carrie Fisher more when we talk about the newer trilogy.
Yes.
Yes, I think that'll be better in that. But yes, we can talk about it. And I think I didn't mention it on here, but when I watched episode 4, Princess Leia was my favorite character. And I don't know if I mentioned that, but if I did, I'm mentioning it again.
You definitely did.
Yes, but she is my favorite. All right, so let's keep going. So now here's what Carrie Fisher's version of the story was. She says, "I was still shooting Star Wars when Mark got into the car accident. It was a really bad accident. Miraculously, his teeth didn't shatter, but his nose did. he had to have some of his ear put into his nose. So they adjusted the film with this snow monster to right away in the movie scratch his face to account for his looks being different.
Interesting. All right?
So it's very interesting. So Star Wars fans is something that it's like one of these mysteries that they've always talked about, to talk about how his face looked different. Okay.
Yeah.
But needless to say, when I'm watching this for the first time, I'm going through it. I was like, whoa, his face is completely different. But for you guys, if you guys first watching it and you're just like me, you're like, what is going on? I wanted to let you know you're not the only one. Okay. Other people have asked that question as well. And I wanted to give you this here on the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. It's exclusive.
This about first look exclusive.
All right. So now this movie I thought was great. So we have this happening in the beginning of the film too as well. We have that. We think Han Solo and Princess Leia are going to be, like, honestly, I'm watching, I'm like, okay, you guys are going to be a thing. You guys are arguing with each other, but this arguing that you guys are doing with each other, it's playful, but you guys like each other. Let's just be real. You both like each other. Just admit it. And we're kind of go on from there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You saw that kind of in the beginning of the film where they're arguing about it. And actually, Han Solo wants this kind of validation from Princess Leia at the beginning of the film, like,
yeah,
just basically be honest. You don't want me to go. Be honest. And Princess Leia's like hiding her feelings. She's like, I don't care. Go. I don't care what you do.
Go ahead.
Oh, but I think that's kind of the part about Princess Leia that I like, right? It's this like, hey, I may like you, you know I do, but I'm gonna keep it guarded for a little bit, okay? I'm gonna keep it guarded a little bit.
Also, she has her priorities straight. Like, let's be real, they're in the middle of an Arctic base, of a snow base, and like under threat of the Empire. She's not thinking about relationships necessarily. Like, she's got a Rebel Alliance to run. Then meanwhile, Han Solo's over here like, oh man, I'm trying to get this girl and everything. Just kill it for a second, dude. Like, seriously.
Okay, but for on Han Solo's, you know, point of view, okay, let's be honest, let's be real. As men, sometimes we don't think straight, okay?
100%.
When we have a girl that we like, that we're interested in, who cares that we're in a war, okay? Who cares? Who cares that the Empire is going to strike back, okay? At this time, okay, what's going to help me through this is I have to know, do you like me or do you not, okay?
And I'm going to leave this planet if you don't give me a straight answer.
But you're right, though. She was on mission. She was like, listen, we don't have time to think about relationships right now, okay?
Mm.
The only thing that we have to think about at this time is we're at war. Okay, and I think that's a good point. I think that's a good point about the whole thing.
Yeah, she was in a position of leadership and everything like that. But also, I mean, let's be real, there was a little bit of denial. Like, let's just be honest. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. She was hiding it. She was trying to push it back. And also, I think she probably never saw herself liking someone like Han Solo.
Exactly. I mean, she's a princess. Like, I'm not gonna like this smuggler. Like, come on. Like, his best friend's a walking carpet. Like, let's let's chill out for a second.
So true, man. But as this is going on, right, they're here trying to hide from the Empire. Darth Vader, like the opening crawl says, he has this obsession with trying to find Luke Skywalker, right? Mm-hmm. And as someone, let's just pretend that we are watching the film for the first time. Like, we don't know what's going to happen here. But Darth Vader has this obsession. Now, there's a scene with him and Palpatine, right?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's just back up just for a second, just like for one second before we get into that.
Yeah,
I don't know if you like had a different idea of like talking about the music or anything like that, but just like a fun fact.
Yes,
this movie is the introduction to the Imperial March, the classic the Darth Vader theme song, basically that first scene of like when he's getting the information about where the rebel base is and everything like that. You hear it in the background. It's this ominous militaristic marching music and everything like that. I'm not going to try to repeat it because I'm not a great singer. You guys know it. You've heard it. Even anybody has heard it. It gets played everywhere. But like this technically is the movie that, which is kind of a fun fact. Like when I was watching the movies for the first time as a teenager, back in the day, I was kind of surprised that the Imperial March wasn't in episode 4, and that it, like, and then I was like, wait a minute, isn't he supposed to be like having the Darth Vader music behind him? And then once I watched episode 5, I was like, okay, this makes more sense. This is like it makes him more ominous and scary as a villain, because like if you notice the difference in episode 4 Darth Vader and episode 5 Darth Vader, episode 4 Darth Vader yells a lot, and like he's he kind of flies off the handle a couple times. Not flies off the handle, like he raises his voice.
Right.
Episode 5 Darth Vader doesn't do that. He's much more reserved, much more ominous, and he kills a few more people too. Like, let's be clear. And yeah, he's also like he's kind of got, it seems like he's gotten a promotion in this movie, and like he was under some people in the last movie, as opposed to this movie, it seems like he's actually in control now.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Because in the beginning of the film, I mean, like there was someone who made him upset. Like he did not, you know, live up to what he did, and so Darth Vader's like, I'm gonna just kill you.
Yep.
And now we have somebody new in charge. Okay, you failed me for the last time.
A lot of people failed Darth Vader for the last time in that movie, for sure. Like, it's just like, oh, all right, getting another force choke promotion. All right, let's do this. Like,
but to be honest, it's like that's kind of what you signed up for. Like, once you get on their side of things, like, you know that's like, it's, he wants perfection or else, you know, like,
yeah, hey, perfection or death, pretty much. Like, it's crazy. If you jump out of light speed too soon, or if you give him the wrong information, or if you don't tell him something soon enough, all right, force choke, next guy, let's see what happens.
Seriously, man. Like, you gotta do your job, and you gotta do it well, man. Mm-hmm. And what is very interesting that, you know what, we'll talk about that when we get to the prequels too. I'm gonna jump too far ahead of myself.
Absolutely.
But Vader was like, literally, like he had, like you're saying, like all power at this point. Mm-hmm. Like he literally was the ambassador for, he wasn't known as Palpatine
in episode 5. Actually, now that we're on the Emperor. In the original versions, they had a different actor playing the Emperor than has played the Emperor pretty much up until, from what I'm hearing, even episode 9. What's his name? The actor who plays the Emperor. I know his name, and I should know his name. Emperor Palpatine. Ian McDiarmid. Is it Ian McDiarmid? Yeah, Ian McDiarmid. Originally, he was played by a guy named Clive Revel, but like in subsequent remasters of the movie, they replaced Ian McDiarmid in the first scene with him as the hologram and everything.
Ah, okay. I gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
So how old is that guy?
Ian McDiarmid.
He must be kind of old.
Very old. I believe he is. He's 75 years old.
Absolutely. Wow. He's been
the Emperor that long.
Wow. I did not know that. Okay. So in this film, he's not known as Palpatine. He's just known as the Emperor at this point, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's known as the Emperor. Okay. So let me make sure I use the right terminology for the film then. So the Emperor and Darth Vader are are pretty much the most powerful people, right? In the whole Emperor, right? You know, Empire. And so now, basically, when Darth Vader is telling you what to do, it's coming at the direct command, right, of the Emperor. So it's basically like, you know, when Darth Vader's coming, we have to do what we have to do. Like, there's no questioning Darth Vader, right, at all.
Not at this point. Definitely not. He is definitely second in command to the Emperor.
Gotcha. So now he's going before for. And wait, did you want to mention anything else before we go to him talking to the Emperor?
I think that's it. Yeah, just kind of the chain of command idea, and just like the. I just really wanted to hit on the music. Make sure we actually like hit on this was the introduction to the Imperial March.
Yes. But, yeah. Because the music did the. Did it so that he didn't have to, you know, yell or have to raise his voice. Like, the music gave the audience the impression, okay, he means business.
Yes, absolutely.
So now, this is where it's funny. We go from a scene where Darth Vader has all power.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the next scene is him pretty much submitting himself, right, in yep. front of the Emperor, okay? And now it's the dialogue, and this is the dialogue, and this is me, like I said, being super, super detail-oriented now. But as we're getting into this right now, this is the time where I'm beginning to notice that there might be some good inside Darth Vader, right? When you're looking at ways or the cracks in the armor of that, there is... let's say there's what they say in the films, that basically that there's a disturbance right inside yeah. you or something of that effect. Well, here is Darth Vader. He goes, he's kneeling down. He goes, "What is thy bidding, my master?" And the Emperor says, "There's a great disturbance in the Force." Darth Vader says, "I have felt it." The Emperor says, "We have a new enemy, the young rebel who destroyed the Death Star. I have no doubt. This boy is the offspring of Anakin Skywalker." So let's think about this for a second. The Emperor knows that Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker. Okay, so okay.
Right.
Spoiler alert. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. But he knows this, right? He knows that Anakin Skywalker is Darth Vader. But yet he does not address, like, he's not saying, "I have no doubt that this boy is your son."
Right.
He goes, "This boy is the offspring of Anakin Skywalker." Like, right. Who you were previously. Who you used to be. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, there's a couple of reasons. One, it's good writing because, you know, we needed that powerful scene at the end. Luke, I am your father, right?
Yeah, they couldn't show their cards too early or anything like right. that.
So that's good writing.
Right.
But also, too, it's the Emperor, like, not even acknowledging who you used to be.
Yeah.
And only acknowledging who you are now. Right?
Right.
So, if we... Okay, so if... This is the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast, okay, guys? It's weird, okay? It's weird. But there is, if we want to, all right? Even though we're going on the dark side to even do this, right? We're going to the dark side to make this illustration. But this is actually very, very, you can use an analogy about this when you're talking about kind of spirituality and Christianity in a way, right? Where Jesus or God, he does not acknowledge you from who you used to be, but he calls you his son. He doesn't acknowledge you for who you used to be, like, "Oh yeah, you used to be this person that used to do X, Y, and Z." It's like, "No, you're my son, you're my child, you're my, you know, this." I'm not even acknowledging the thing you used to identify with before, but now I'm only acknowledging you and who you are now, which is my son, my child, right? So you can this hey what where other place can you get this breakdown? Okay, nowhere else. Okay,
but this the weird is perspective. I'll be honest,
weird perspective because we're talking about the dark side, but still exactly. I want to think about that, right? But anyway, needless to say, he's not even acknowledging who. Darth Vader used to be. So he's doing this, right? But here's Darth Vader. He responds with, "How is that possible?" Now, even though Darth Vader is responding with, "How is that possible?" Okay, this is me being ultra, ultra, like super, you know, going into this. I think Darth Vader already knew that Luke was his son. Okay? Before the Emperor even brings this up to him, right? Here's the reason why. Told you this is me from a whole new perspective, why I think this. I think he knew that because when the Emperor says there's a great disturbance in the Force, he says, I felt this great disturbance. So he already knows that this great disturbance is coming from this guy, Anakin Skywalker. And when the Emperor says, search your feelings, Lord Vader, you know it to be true, he could destroy us. Vader immediately goes, he's just a boy. Okay?
A little bit of mercy from Vader.
Yes, exactly. A little bit of mercy. It's a little bit of, this is my son. Let's not destroy him because I know what you want to do. You want us to kill him. He's just a boy. And his first plea to his master was his youth and also the fact that he had no help. Obi-Wan can no longer help him. I killed Obi-Wan. Let's leave him alone. Let's not try to kill him, okay? Because one, his youth, he's just a boy. And also, he doesn't have a teacher. He does not have a master anymore to help him on this journey. Like, he doesn't have that. So that's his plea. Then the Emperor says, hold up. The Force is strong with him. The son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi. So the Emperor pushes back on him. And then Vader goes another resistance. He goes, well, you know what? If he could be turned, he could become a powerful ally. So you can see the wrestle in Darth Vader with, okay, this is my son. Because he's my son, I don't want him to be destroyed. So because I don't want him to be destroyed, how about this? Okay? Because I don't want him to be destroyed, you know, I'm giving this up, but how about this? Isn't this great? What if we turn him to our side? And then the Emperor, at this request, he goes, yes, he would be a great asset. Can it be done? Then he says, he will join us or die, master. Only then does he
After say, he's gotten some reassurance.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I feel like that shows the wrestle that he had inside of him still with all this. How do you feel about that theory?
Okay, I would love to get into like a lot of the reasons why I think Palpatine did that, but I kind of want to save that for prequels. There's some things in the prequels that happen that make me want to explore that more, because in order to get into like why I think the Emperor said what he said, I would have to get into like his tactical mind. Maybe he's playing mind games with Vader, all this different stuff. And I kind of want to save that for the prequels, but just kind of to keep a long story short, I think that the Emperor knew that he knew. And I think that the Emperor was trying to use Vader's own thoughts against him. I think that it was the Emperor's plan all along to have Luke join them. I'm not going to get into why, but I believe, because that's for, I think I'll discuss that in episode six when we talk about that. But I think that because of certain reasons having to do with Vader, having to do with him, you know, him not actually, you know, certain limitations that Vader had, I think that it was Palpatine's plan, once he found out about the son of Skywalker, to have him join them. And I think he was trying, instead of just out and out ordering Vader to kill his own son, I think he kind of played a little bit of mind manipulation games with him, like saying, okay, well, I think we're going to kill him. Oh, you don't want to kill him. Well, what do you want to do, Vader? And then he kept going back. So that's the thing about the Emperor. The Emperor is a master manipulator. And like you see that all throughout the prequel trilogy as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We can, and we're definitely going to talk about that when we get to the prequels.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's, I like that. So see, this is why when you're a Star Wars fan, you can come at it in three different ways.
Okay, absolutely. Guys?
So there's my theory, there's his, and we'll actually come probably table this discussion and bring it back when we talk about the prequels, going through the mind, okay, of the Emperor. Okay, the mind of why he does what he does, you know, how he does everything. And
I'll be honest, man, like not to you talk about how your favorite character in the first movie was Princess Leia. My favorite character in the entire prequel saga and in the entire original trilogy is the Emperor. Wow. not because I like him, but he's a very well written villain. I feel like.
So and, that's kind of the reason why I like Thanos. I think he was beautifully written.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because you have to get to a point to where you kind of understand the villain. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that it does, if you're a writer out there, you like to write for films, and for some reason you're listening to this, if you're going to be, make sure that your characters have layers. That's absolutely the most important thing. And if you make a villain have layers and make it to where, even for a short little while, you go, huh, I get that. Or, huh, I understand that. Or, you know, that's clever. You've written a good character. Yes. The Emperor is an amazing character. And I'll put this out here in the prequels too. I kind of agree with Anakin, man. All right. When we're going to talk about that in prequel 1, 2, and 3. But, I kind of agree with why he became Darth Vader, man. All right. And,
absolutely.
But we're going to really table that. And I'm going to dive into all of that. Oh, man.
I can't wait. I have a lot of opinions about the prequels, man. A lot of positive, some negative, but we'll get into it.
Yes, for sure. So now here's the crazy part, which I found fascinating in episode 5, is in the middle of what you just said, a war, right? So we're talking about in the middle of a war. We don't want, Han Solo. You need to stop thinking about romanticism. You know, we in the middle of a war right now, bro. Like, you need to stop thinking about that. But what I found interesting that is in the middle of a war, the guy who's, I don't know, you could even say was prophesied. Okay, you can even go that way. The guy who is the hero of the war, Obi-Wan, who's dead, but from the grave. From the Force, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's telling Luke Skywalker, hey, it's time for you to train to be a Jedi. What in the world? Like, why in the middle of a war is Obi-Wan trying to tell Luke that he needs to be trained to be a Jedi? What's that about?
I think that Obi-Wan knew that the confrontation or knew that a confrontation would happen between Vader and Luke at some point. And yes, it was inconvenient because but there were deeper matters to deal with, like balance of the Force and everything to deal with. So he knew that he's not going to have much time to train, but he needs to get as much training in the Force and as much training in his own will and his own, and his own grasp on the Force to handle that confrontation. And even as we see in the later part of this movie, he still wasn't ready even with the training he got. So imagine if he hadn't gone and trained, he would be completely unprepared.
And okay, so we're going to talk about a little bit of that, but I want to we're going to talk about his training in a little bit too, and like, yeah, there's some stuff I want to talk to you about. I'm gonna make sure to not go. Don't put the cart before the horse, okay?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So it might have been inconvenient, like you're talking about, but it was necessary, right? It's a necessary inconvenience because we had somewhere to go with this, right? Now, here's what I found very interesting is Yoda. Let's talk about Yoda for a second.
Let's talk about Yoda.
Yes. Okay. Yoda. If you were the first time, even though I was watching episode 5 for the first time, because these movies have been gone on for years and years and years, I was familiar with the concept of Yoda, right? I'm familiar with this all-wise one with Yoda and everything. But in episode 5, he's introduced to us as an audience as kind of a jokester, right? Kind of like it's kind of interesting how they introduce him, right?
He's introduced as like this crazy hermit character, and it's almost like kind of a red herring thing. Like, you're not really, like, it's almost like how it was written, like, you're not really supposed to know at first that this is Yoda. And I don't know how much advertising the movie did at the time and everything, and I don't know how much of a surprise it was, but it was a very interesting choice to make Yoda kind of have this facade as like this crazy guy, pretty much.
Yeah, look, creepy, yeah. crazy guy. Okay, kind of at first, right? And also, right. man, he's so short, and you're like, man, is this like a little creature? Like, can you get away? So, like, what is wrong with this guy? But what I find interesting, and tell me if I'm wrong, I was getting a lot of like Rafiki vibes from like Lion King.
100%. Yes, absolutely.
Because I was like, am I crazy? Like, I'm over here like, I was getting some Rafiki, like, you know, like, you know, he's over here, ha-ha, like, with this stick and hitting Lion King. I'm like, I'm getting that same vibe. Like, even though you're crazy, you got some wisdom inside you, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
I believe, exactly. Like, Rafiki was very much the crazy, the wise old hermit that lived in the tree and everything, just like Yoda is. It's actually it's a relatively common thing you see in a lot of these adventure movies, like kind of the wise man being kind of this quirky dude or whatever, or, you know, wise sage that, like, you know, the hero goes to is kind of this like quirky person and everything and has this quirky personality, but then when things get serious, like, their voice lowers and they get super serious and everything, and that's, you know, it kind of happens with both.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now, as you know, we're talking about how crazy Yoda is, right? But what is very interesting is Yoda was extremely fearful. Extremely. It felt like, I shouldn't say extremely, but it did seem like he was very apprehensive to train Luke. Okay. Now, why do you think? Because, you know, at this time, you know, if you're watching for the first time, you're kind of confused. Like, why in the world is this guy so afraid to train Luke? Because at the time, you know, Luke just helped the Empire. Luke just used the Force to strike, you know, the Death Star down. So what was Yoda's fear? Why was he having that so much fear in that situation?
It probably deals with a lot of, like, he feels... I'm not going to get into too much of the prequels, but is it okay if I take some of, like, not plot points, but just kind of themes from the prequels and everything?
Yeah, of course.
Translated. All right. Yoda's dealing with a lot of guilt over the fact that over the genocide of the Jedi, pretty much. I'm trying to think of this from the perspective of, like, when the movie was written, but I still think that, you know, obviously Yoda and Obi-Wan are the last of the Jedi that we knew, and I think that Yoda knows that he, you know, the Darth Vader is the reason for that, and so he does not want to be responsible for sending this child to sending this child on the path to the dark side. So that's why I think that's why he was hesitant, because he saw what happened with Anakin Skywalker. He saw what happened with the Jedi in general, and so he's very, the thing about Yoda is he is always very wise, and so he likes to think things through, and he likes to err on the side of caution, and because of that, he saw what happened in the past, and he did not want history to repeat itself.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that makes sense. Okay, so that makes sense. You know, to that, like, oh, look, I'm afraid. But okay, so it's this fear, but also I feel like this fear is also because of his father. Like, basically, I don't want to train you and then you end up using my training for the dark side, right?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's kind of how I was feeling. Like, he's like, man, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if I want to do that. Because he kept talking about the impatience, right, of Luke. He kept saying, man, you're so impatient. And I think it was reminding him of his father. Like, man, I don't know if I want to train this guy, because what if he ends up just like his father, right? Right. Now, what I found interesting, too, is I was super confused. And I'm still confused. Still confused about Luke Skywalker when he walked into the cave. I was like, huh? What is going on? What does this mean? Because, okay, so can you kind of, I probably should, you know, help a little bit, but can you explain to the audience, like, what exactly happened? And then can you, like, explain what it means. Is that possible, okay, or am I? Is it too much?
100% I can definitely do that.
Okay.
As far as like what happened in, you know, he goes into this like place in the woods of the Forest Moon of Endor. That's where Yoda lives. No, Dagobah, not Endor. Sorry, people are gonna get on me for that. Dagobah. He's on the planet Dagobah with Yoda, and apparently, like, the reason why Yoda has taken refuge here is because the Force energy can hide him, and so there's a lot of like even dark side energy apparently, and this area that Yoda points out to Luke is very saturated in dark side energy. It's strong with the power of the dark side, and so Luke goes in, and he runs into a vision of Darth Vader, and so he lights up his saber and fights Darth Vader, strikes down Darth Vader. If I'm not mistaken, I think you watched the movie more recently than I did.
Yes.
Do you remember who ignited their saber first? Who turned on their lightsaber first?
I'm pretty sure it was Luke.
Yeah, I think so too. I didn't want to say for sure, but like I think, yeah, Luke ignites his saber first, and that's kind of a show of aggression as well. And so he uses that aggression to strike down Vader, and then the mask of Vader like explodes and reveals that under the mask of Vader is Luke. Is a vision of Luke.
Yeah, that was weird to me.
Yeah. So basically, what it means in the movie is that there are aspects that Luke has the potential to go down the exact same path as Darth Vader.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. That, you know, if Luke continues down this path of aggression, that if he continues being the one to strike the first blow, if he continues down this path of anger, then he definitely has the potential to be just like Vader, if not worse. That's the kind of the interpretation that I believe. And also this aspect of like going into and facing your demons and facing like your personal thoughts, it's also another aspect of a lot of
Buddhism.
Eastern religion. Yeah, Buddhism, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Like a lot of like Eastern, like Zen Buddhism, this idea of facing your inner turmoil, or like dealing with your own dark side, coming face to face literally with the dark part of yourself. So that's another reason why it's important as well.
Okay, so that helps me out a lot, because basically it was a fear that not really a fear, but it's just letting you know that this could be the path that you could be heading toward.
Exactly.
And that actually foreshadowed some things that happened in episode 6 as mm-hmm. well, the more that I think about it. So that's really good now. Thank you, because that helped me tremendously.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man.
So now when they're doing the training, right, here it is, Yoda's trying to teach Luke, you know, basically his, ship had sunk into I don't know, the swampy area, whatever. And exactly. Yoda's trying to tell him that you can lift it, right? That you can actually lift it out of it. And Luke's like, man, you're crazy. You know what I mean? Like, there is no way that I can do this. And what's interesting is, this is, I don't know why, but the training that Yoda and Luke did reminded me of the Karate Kid.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I got Karate Kid vibes throughout the whole thing. You know, like the whole, like, wax on, wax off. Like, this is crazy. This is this kind of training I'll never need. I'll never use. What is this for? And so what I looked it up, and I found out, of course, that this film came before that movie, right? Came before the Karate Kid, yeah. Right. So I feel, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like this movie inspired a lot of other films. I just feel like it did. Like when it comes to training, when it comes to different things, just the story in general. I just feel like this, of course, there's nothing new under the sun, but I feel like I got a lot of Karate Kid vibes through this, right? Am I crazy when I to say that?
Not at all. Not at all. There's a lot of the reason why there are a lot of parallels between the Karate Kid and the training aspects of the Karate Kid and the training aspects of Return of the Jedi is if you know, Daniel in the Karate Kid was training with Mr. Miyagi to learn karate, to learn this martial art, to learn this martial art that also has a lot to do with Buddhism. Like, it's another aspect of Buddhism, this aspect of patience, discipline, and this idea of just like training yourself, and not, you know, not jumping to conclusions and everything, and just like this idea of Zen, this idea of like controlling your own self, pretty much. And that's, you know, and as far as like the parallels and everything like that, yes, you could say that like Karate Kid like took some inspiration from Return of the Jedi, but I think it's more of a fact that both of them took inspiration from Eastern Buddhism, pretty much.
Yeah, you know what? I like your explanation, makes more sense.
Hey, man, I love talking about movies. I'll do it all day, man.
That's so cool, man. All right, so we got this going on, right? And, okay, so the scene, they're in there, and there's a couple of things in the dialogue I found really cool. So Luke is telling Yoda, there's no way we can do it. He goes, Master, moving stones around is one thing, but this is totally different. And Yoda goes, no different. Only different in your mind. You must unlearn what you have learned, right? And okay, so there's so much practical application. Absolutely. Of this for everything, right? So, but let's in this dialogue, one, there's a lot of times, right, when you're growing up, you're doing certain things, and the only way you can move forward in life is you have to unlearn a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if, and this is for anything, you could have had both of us, we have parents that we absolutely love that raise us the best of their ability, but still there are things that as adults we have to unlearn, okay, what we previously have learned before in order to move forward, okay, in life. It's like, man, and there's so many times that at first we're like, man, there's no way I can do this, there's no way that this situation can happen, but it's literally a mind thing, right? It's literally taking the time to say, okay, I gotta stop with what I've learned before, what I've thought I learned before, unlearn that so that I'm able to learn to move on to grow and to be the person I want to be. And I just found that statement so profound. I mean, what do you think? Am I about that as well?
Again, absolutely, man. Just like going back and just like realizing that your perspective is one, you know, is one aspect, one line in basically the idea of like you're basically looking down the barrel of like a telescope at this huge painting, and sometimes in order to like get the full perspective we have to take a step back and unlearn some things, take a step back and get another perspective on things. So yeah, absolutely, 100%.
And so
it's very practical.
This is okay, and now of course this is the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. Okay, I gotta jump in here and give you some biblical truth on this as well. Is like there's so many times that the Bible talks about like forgetting those things which are behind, right? And reaching forth to those things which are before. So it's literally saying, like, you know, there's some ways of doing things that, you know, that is just wrong, that we gotta sit back and unlearn. And get ourselves ready to where, like, what does God want for me to have? How does God want me to behave? How does God want me to act? You know, because there's some natural tendencies that we have. There's some ways that we were taught that we've got to unlearn. And now we've got to push forward to learn more, right? Or to do what God would have us to do. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
And listen, I can make a sermon out of Star Wars, okay? There's so much I can do. Just
there's a lot there, man. There's a lot there.
You know, to do it. But what's great too is, now here's the crazy part. He's telling him you gotta unlearn what you've learned. And so here's Luke's response is, all right, I'll give it a try. Woo! And this is what Yoda says, which is so good. He goes, "No, try not. Do or do not. There is no try."
Yeah, that's probably one of the best, probably top five quotes in Star Wars of all time. Like, seriously.
Oh my, so that's so good, man. Oh my soul. Okay, how do you feel about that quote, man?
I like it. I like the philosophy behind it. Basically, it's saying that if you go into the mindset, if you go into something with the mindset that you're just going to try and fail, you've basically already failed. You should go into something with the mindset that you're going to succeed. Not that, like, if you don't succeed, you won't do it again. But it's just idea of just like positive thinking, pretty much. Just like the idea of thinking positively. Like, I'm not just gonna attempt to do this. I'm going to do this. In every attempt, I'm going to do this. I'm not just gonna try. You know, it's like, oh, I might do this. I might not. No, I'm going to do this thing, and eventually, you will do it with that mindset.
And here's what's so crazy, right? It was last Sunday. All right, last Sunday I was at church. We had a guest preacher at our church. And he said in the Bible, there's nowhere in the Bible that God tells us to try. He either tells us to do or do not. And it gets to this purpose of application. Like, God never tells us to try. Like, oh, you can try to do that. Or try to do this, or try to do, it's more like you need to do it. And I think that comes with that same mentality, is like, man, a lot of us were like, well, I'm just gonna dip my finger in this Christianity thing. It's like, nah, man, just jump in, plunge into that thing, and do, okay, and do it. There is no try. So there's so much we can go into this, but here it is. Luke is thinking, man, I can't do it. Because he's trying, he can't. Right?
Exactly. He's already basically, because there's that, like, even if it's just like a small percentage of reservation in his own mind, it prevents him from putting everything into what he's doing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. How many times, right? Okay, we play football together, right? Yeah. There would be people, like teams that we face. Maybe they were more formidable. Maybe, you know, on paper, they were better than us, right? And let's say they I've heard it. Like, I heard one time that we lost a game to someone, and someone in the locker room was like, I knew we were going to lose, right? And they threw the helmet down. And in my mind, I said, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to go to battle with you, because you were already had your mind set up that we were going to lose.
Yeah.
Those aren't the type of people you want to be in battle with you. Those aren't the type of people that you want to do anything. It's like, no, I don't want you on my team. We want people that are going to actually do and not try, right?
Right. Let's take the football metaphor even further. Doing tackling drills, pretty much. They always talked about run through the guy. Don't run and then stop. Because if you run and then hesitate, if there's that split second of hesitation, you're not going to make the tackle. You're not going to be able to, you know, shed that blocker. Like, if there's that one moment of hesitation, you won't be at your full potential and everything. And that, I feel like that's also applicable as well.
Bro, that's good too. Like, literally, there's so many lessons that you and I know we're being kind of nerdy about Star Wars and we're going in detail with all this stuff, but this is where a lot of films I can do the same thing with Marvel films. I can do the same thing with a lot of other films, where there's some life lessons in there that you can like literally pull out, you know, and help yourself in life. And that's another thing why I understand that there was a fear back in the day. There's from a lot of Christians, you know, where they were afraid of people going to the movies and watching these films and everything like that. But you can't live your life in fear, because there's always something you can pull out of anything.
Absolutely.
There are times I know, and I haven't watched, and this is something else I'm going to binge eventually, is Harry Potter, right? It's always, I remember growing up, people said, oh, so it's bad, it's wrong, it's witchcraft, it's all this simple stuff. I bet, and I haven't watched it, but I am 100% facts that I could probably watch those films and get something amazingly wonderful out of it. I'm almost 100% facts with that.
As somebody who's seen Harry Potter and like it was in the same position as you, I didn't read Harry Potter until I was in college. Didn't watch the movies until I was in college. But yeah, there are a lot of things you can take out of that as well. A lot of positive messages and everything. And that's one of the things I enjoy about Star Wars as well. It's just like the positive messages and the positive themes that it gives the overarching story.
You're absolutely right with that, because I think sometimes Christians are scared of the stories that come out of Hollywood, right? There's this fear of, man, the messages that they could, you know, implement. But what's so great is that I believe that God has given a lot of people the gift of being a creator or creating things. And mm-hmm. with this gift, there's almost with almost anything, I can't think of when there's not, but I'm just for that perchance. But for anything that someone creates, you can see the hand of God in that. And I feel like sometimes when we kind of deprive ourselves of certain art or art forms, we deprive our own selves of a way that we can see God even in something where we think that there's no way God can be in that. But yeah, so anyways, we can dive into that too. But here it is, in the middle of the story, we have Yoda teaching or trying to train Luke. But as he's training Luke and trying to get all this done, Luke is having these visions, right, in his head about Han Solo, about Leia. Because as he's getting all this good training done, Han Solo and Leia are, man, they got a lot going on, okay? They got
a lot of drama going on in that Falcon, man.
Yeah, too much drama going on right now, man. You got, I forgot the guy's name right now. What's the guy who they can't really trust, right? The guy who double-crossed them.
Lando.
Yeah, Lando. Lando double-crosses them, right? He's over here double-crossing them left and right. You got he got all these visions. Now, let me ask you a question. As all this is going on with Han Solo, with Leia, and everything like that, do you think Luke should have left? Because, guys, if you watch the films, Luke decides he's not going to complete his training. He's going to go out and help his friends. But do you think that was the right decision?
That's a tough question. Do I think he was prepared? No, obviously not. He was not prepared in the Force. He was not prepared in his training. But do I think he should have? I think so. I think it was important for Luke, from a growth perspective, to have this failure, even like just to ultimately have this failure, realizes what exactly he's up against, as you know, and he realized, and it's kind of a hard failure. I mean, yeah, it was a big loss and everything like that. He learned a lot. But I think ultimately it was for Luke's person, maybe not, you know, other people, but like for Luke's good that he went and had this failure. Yeah. I think that he made the right decision.
Okay. So
it wasn't the smart decision, but yeah. I think he probably made the best decision possible, because if he hadn't gone, Han and Leia and everybody would have been captured. And I feel like then there would be nobody to face Darth Vader. He would have just taken them all down, and somebody might have died in that case. So I think ultimately it was the best possible decision for Luke to leave at that point.
Okay, so he's leaving, right? So he ends up going on the ship. He's fighting it. I'm going to be honest with you about something that made me a little upset, okay? So Luke is going. Yoda and Obi-Wan, they both were fearful, right? Luke is trying to persuade Obi-Wan and Yoda that he has to go, all right? And he tells them, he said, man, I can feel the Force. I can help them. And Obi-Wan says, but you can't control it. He said, this is a dangerous time for you when you will be tempted by the dark side of the Force. Now, Yoda says, yes, yes. to Obi-Wan, you listen. I love how he talks. He said, the cave. Remember your failure at the cave. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, Luke says, but I've learned so much since then. Master Yoda, I promise to return and finish what I've begun. You have my word. Now, he's going out to face Vader. He's going out to do all this before he's even a fully trained Jedi.
Right.
Okay? So he's going out there and doing all this. Now, there's a couple of things, right, that, man, I, okay, so let's talk about Han and Leia for a little bit, right? Okay. So Lando double crosses them, right? And Han is about to go into this carbon freezing chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's going into it, Leia finally admits her feelings, right? She goes, yes. She has the classic line, I love you. And Han Solo, apparently he freestyled the line. I found that out later. He goes with, I know. Right? As they're going down. There's a couple things I want to talk about, right? With this scene. It was emotional. It was sad. And why did George Lucas break my heart like that, man? I want to talk about Han Solo. I mean, George Lucas, I should say. What he loved to do is break my heart at the end of every film, okay? So, episode 4, he killed my man Obi-Wan for no reason, mm-hmm. okay? No reason, okay? I know he sacrificed himself. No, have a real lightsaber fight and you would have still been alive, okay? That's number one. That made me mad. Now we got Han, you know, in this carbon freezing chamber, okay? What's up with George Lucas, all right? Let's talk about it.
George Lucas, man, he loves those dramatic moments. He loves to build the tension. He loves to give a little and then take a little bit more. Like he really does as a storyteller. And it's just so funny. Now that we've been talking about the movie and talking about like the back and forth between Leia and Han, just the dramatic irony of the fact that when Leia finally admits her feelings, then Han is like, even in this moment of when he's about to be frozen, he's still petty. So yeah. He's still just a little bit petty. And he's like, you know what? I've been trying to get you to admit your feelings this whole time. So now that you finally have, I'm not going to say it back. And then I'm frozen. Like, seriously. Like, who's colder, the Carbonite or Han at that point? Like, seriously.
So true, man.
Because that
relationship is probably one of my absolute favorite relationships on screen, okay? Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, Princess Leia was my favorite. I'm a little sad. I'm going to talk about it when we talk about episode 3, about some stuff I'm sad about. Right. But I will say this. Their relationship was so great. And I know that in the original writing, Han Solo was supposed to say, I love you too, I think.
Yes.
I love you back.
Yes.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I believe that this fits Han Solo's character way more with know than saying, I love you back. I think
that's why Harrison Ford is such a great actor. He knew that. Harrison Ford had been like, you know, had been Han. He knows Han. Like, he's been like in Han, you know, he'd been acting as Han for, you know, for, you now going on 2 movies, so he knew Han wouldn't say I love you too, not after all this. He'd say I know and then not give a chance to for anybody to respond. Like, he just like basically that carpet was like a mic drop, dude. Like, it was just like gone. Like, it was just like, and now we don't know, and now we can't respond back.
That is so crazy. That is so, but it's so, it fits his character. And yeah. I loved it, man. I love that scene. I love it. And then we're going to actually go back to that particular line when we go to episode 3. We're going to go back to it because there's so many Easter eggs I'm noticing in Star Wars with each episode. So we're going to definitely talk about that scene again. But mm-hmm. as all this is going on, our man Luke Skywalker is facing his father. And he's unprepared, right?
Right.
And let's be honest, the lightsaber fight in episode 5 is 3,000 times better
Oh, 100%.
Than what we saw in episode 4, okay? The lightsaber scene, everything was amazing. Everything was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Darth Vader's like throwing like pieces of the base around. It's like this is Darth Vader's true potential. You want to talk about like lifting X-wings out? He's like taking like generators and throwing them at Luke and everything.
Yeah,
and the dog. It's crazy, man. It's such a good battle scene. It really is.
Okay,
especially for the effects at the time. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm gonna give it that caveat. Just standalone, it's a great battle scene. 100%.
100%. The fight scene, and I don't know if George, and this is something I'm just want to know, did George Lucas get someone to choreograph this for him? Like, I want to know, how do you go from a terrible fight scene in episode 4 to, I don't even know, 3,000 times better in episode 5? I really want to know that, okay? I really want to know what led to that, because it's so different. It's night and day, okay, between the two. But I will say this. I'm very surprised that Luke Skywalker didn't go to the dark side.
Yeah.
Because there's three reasons why Luke Skywalker should have went to the dark side. Three reasons, okay? Mm-hmm. One of the reasons is, okay, and this is a funny reason, a little, not really funny, but it's kind of funny here, is Darth Vader took his hand, okay? So, I'm gonna be honest. If someone took my hand, I'm gonna do whatever you want me to do. You want me to do what, man? Okay, cool. I just lost
my hand.
You got it, okay? I'm gonna be on the dark side, all right?
Yeah, I'm just, you know what? I'm good, like, like, I don't really want to fall like to the center of this planet right now. So let's see how this dark side works out. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So out of survival, I may have went on the dark side, right?
Fair. Yeah, absolutely.
That's number one. But number two, he finds out that Darth Vader is his father. Okay. Now, here's a guy who his entire life, he got daddy issues, right? Yeah. He's been looking, he's been searching, he's been wanting to know his father. And from someone who thought his father was dead to now being face to face, well, not really face to face, you know, but to being in face front of mask. Yeah, exactly, face to mask to his father, that might make anybody, you know, say, man, I want to have a relationship with my father. And so, and I don't care how it is, I will be on the dark side to have a relationship with my father. Right. So that's that possibility. But then the third biggest reason why he could have and should have went to the dark side is the fact of Obi-Wan lied to him.
Yeah.
You can sit back and say, well, he was, being clever with his words, he said that the dark side. No. He lied.
Like, yeah, you can try to defend it all you want, but ultimately, Obi-Wan did not give him the truth he needed in that moment. Like, and that's another reason why Luke was not prepared for this fight. No. Like, yeah,
he's not prepared. But here's the crazy part. Here's the absolute crazy part, and we are definitely going to talk about in the prequels as well, is the Jedi, as great as they are, as amazing as they are, they're very flawed people still.
Yes, yes. And that's one, oh man. We could talk about that in the prequels. We could definitely talk about that in the new movies. Like, the idea that the Jedi do a lot of the wrong things for the right reasons, it seems. Like, saying to completely shut off your feelings is one of the things. Basically keeping things from people, being secretive, that's all this stuff. Like, and again, it shows, I really kind of like the fact, like, it's not, I don't consider it a plot hole at all that Obi-Wan didn't tell Luke didn't tell Luke that Darth Vader was his father. I consider that a human character trait in Obi-Wan. Like, I think that Obi-Wan is just a flawed human, and I think he just didn't know how, like, he was, Obi-Wan, if you look, you know, if you look at it from the perspective of the prequels, Obi-Wan was still heartbroken about Anakin. And yeah. So, he probably didn't have the strength to be able to tell Luke to be able to relive those moments and relive all that time that they spent together and tell Luke and look Luke in the face and even admit to himself that this was Anakin's child. This was the result of this. The reason why he's on his own like that is a result of my failure. And that's one of the things that Obi-Wan feels is that he failed Luke. He failed Anakin. And because, you know, and seeing Luke is coming face to face with his failure. And so maybe he just never really, brought that to the surface because he didn't have the strength to admit it himself.
Mm. And also what's frustrating for me is Obi-Wan was not with Luke when I felt like Luke needed him. Remember, they were going out and Obi-Wan basically said, if you're going to go out and fight Darth Vader now, I won't be with you for the fight. And that's something, and the whole time he kept like screaming or asking for Obi-Wan to help him, and Obi-Wan was not there.
Again, it shows his flaw. It goes back to that idea that Obi-Wan couldn't face his failure, even as being one with the Force. He still is a flawed being and couldn't face his failure. And it's just really kind of it shows why there's more to this movie than the surface. Like, just the fact that this flawed human being could not face the fact that he failed someone so deeply to the point where he abandons his son.
Yeah.
Like, it's nuts. And it's just, it's really tragic. Like, this whole movie is a tragedy from start to finish. It is a tragedy. Like, in like any kind of Shakespearean tragedy, any kind of thing like that, it is just bad thing happens. Okay, keep going. Another bad thing happens. Okay, keep going. Oh, wow. The worst thing happens. And then movie ends, pretty much.
Yeah. And Luke is someone who, even though he had the biggest test he ever could face, was way stronger. And I know we're probably going to do a lot more comparisons when we get to the prequel, but he had more reasons, I think, in that moment to go to the dark side than even Anakin did.
For sure. For sure. And that was like that's one of the victories of the movie, is Luke showing the fortitude to let go and not give in. Let go, you know, literally let go. Like, let go of the thing he was holding onto and fall rather than turn to the dark side. That is basically the victory of the movie, is Luke not giving in under so much adversity, under him completely being unprepared, abandoned, and lied to. And, like, the fact that he had all that adversity facing, all these reasons to just give up, he doesn't. He keeps going. And that's what makes Luke a great hero. That's what makes Luke a better Jedi than Obi-Wan, than Anakin. I mean, than Anakin and Obi-Wan. And that's what makes, you know, that's why he's the lead. He overcame that adversity in the darkest moment in the movie.
That's so, man, that's so good. I think that's so, and this is another reason why I love these characters, right? Mm-hmm. So in 4, 5, and 6, you know, we both are seeing the character growth, the character development of all of these characters. Right. We are beginning to understand them in a better way. We're beginning to see basically what makes them tick, what makes them go, what hurts them. And what's very interesting, the end of this film, even though he was able to not succumb to the dark side. He still was talking to Obi-Wan in the Force, and he was saying, Obi-Wan, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me? You know, like, it's this cry out to him still, because it still hurt him.
Yeah.
Right? It still hurt. And what's very interesting is that Obi-Wan, he kind of hurt Anakin and also hurt Luke, you know?
Right.
In his lifetime. So he had a lifetime. Obi-Wan had a lifetime of letting people down.
Skywalkers. Like,
dang.
Yeah. Like, it just keep in being afraid, in not being able to, in not being able to face his past failure, he was not able to, he failed Luke. In not being able to face the fact that he failed Anakin, he failed Luke.
Man.
Yeah, it's, he never unlearned what he learned.
Woo! Hey, let's talk about it.
He really didn't. Like, he was kind of, and I was going to get into this, like, when you were talking about, like, unlearning what you learned as well. But, like, the idea of sometimes there are reasons why we do the things we do in life, and there are justifiable reasons why we do the things we do in life, but that doesn't mean that we should continue doing them for the rest of our lives. And there was a reason why there was a reason why that he wasn't completely forthright with Anakin in the prequels, and there was a reason, but ultimately that lack of forthrightness led was part of what led Anakin to the dark side. I'm not saying it's all Obi-Wan's fault.
Yeah,
but even Obi-Wan admits it's his own failure, and that continues on to the movie. His inability to be, he continues this inability to be forthright with Luke, and that causes Luke to be defeated. Or that's so part of what causes Luke to be defeated.
Yep.
So, like,
very, very true.
It's very much an object lesson of what Yoda was talking about.
Mm. So here, at the end of all this, Luke did not succumb to the dark side. He had every opportunity to. And at the end of the film, we have Lando, Chewie, Princess Leia, everyone's gone. You got gets reunited with his friends, but I mean, sadly, my man Solo is frozen. Mm-hmm. Okay, because George Lucas wants to hurt my heart at the end of every movie. But this is how the film kind of ends, you know, before we go into the next, before we get to the next episode. So here's the crazy thing. I liked episode 5 a lot more than I liked episode 4.
Right.
Okay.
Before we get into the comparisons, let's just, I kind of want to deal with one more plot point. The reason why they were able to find Luke was he wasn't able to communicate with Obi-Wan, but somebody he did get in contact with was Leia. There was a connection.
Oh.
He connected through the Force to Leia.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, I think there was a scene where Darth Vader senses that connection as well in this movie. And that serves as foreshadowing for the next movie. And
exactly.
That's kind of, yeah, and that kind of, it kind of leads into, you know, some unanswered questions, you know, basically prepping you for the next movie. And that's exactly why I love it as well. Like, it's just like, you have this Force connection between Luke and Leia, and you wonder where that's going to go.
Exactly. And we don't want to spoil anything. So yes,
yeah.
that's a very important point, because he couldn't get in touch with him, but for somehow he was able to get in contact with Leia, which is actually good for the rest of the films, actually, as mm-hmm. we go along with all this as well. Now, this, like I said, I think this film I like better than 4. So when I was talking to you guys last time, and I talked about how much I liked episode 4, I really like episode 4. I think it set the groundwork for everything. But episode 5 is a better film, and I think it's a better film based upon what we know from episode 4, right? So it's kind of unfair in a little bit, but episode 4 had a lot more action, especially with the lightsaber scene at the end.
For sure.
And we find out even more, there's more groundwork that needs to be laid, because I believe, and I might be wrong on this, so tell me if I'm wrong, was episode 5 the first time we heard about the Jedi?
No, I believe they dealt with it in episode 4. I think Obi-Wan mentioned, I was a Jedi Knight, just like your father.
Okay. Yeah,
the Jedi were mentioned in episode 4 as well. That was kind of an aspect of the film. But we get into more the philosophy of the Jedi, I think.
Right. And how it, and I know we skipped, there's a part where I skipped, where Yoda kind of explained the Force. That was the first time it was really like, one of the first times it was presented to the audience of what exactly it is.
Yeah.
You know, based upon the failure of Luke, and Yoda's like, no, this is what the Force is. It's everything life created. It's all around us. Mm-hmm. My ally is the Force, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
So we have all that. So we got a lot more groundwork is being laid in this story to set up 6, because I think that 4 and 5 were great things to lay the groundwork for stuff that we know. And that's why episode 6 has way more action in it.
For sure.
You know, but I believe 5 is better than 4. Okay. And so if I'm going to rate it, like I said, episode, now looking back, episode 4, I would give it a 7.5 or 8, only in not be saying it's bad. It's a good movie. It's a good film. Okay, guys, so if you don't hate me too much, but I'm still going to give it a 7.58 just because it's laying the groundwork. And then this film, I would give it an 8.59. I'm still 8.59 on this film, only because I know what's coming ahead. So if we're going to do this, I'm going to say 8.5 or 9. Tell me what do you think? What you think on that?
All right, man. This one's a 10. This one's a 10 out of 10 for me. And let me explain why.
Okay.
Empire Strikes Back is, in my opinion, the best Star Wars movie. Yeah, it really is. When I say 10 out of 10, I mean in comparison to the other Star Wars movies, obviously. I'm not talking about, like, best movie of all time or anything like that.
Yeah, of course.
It's one of them. It's absolutely one of them. Just because when we were having our discussion about episode 4, we really didn't get into a lot of philosophical discussions about the themes in the movie, did we?
Right. No.
This movie, like, Shelton, we've been recording for over an hour and a half, and most of that has been talking about the philosophy of the philosophy, the underlying themes of this movie. We didn't even hit all of the plot points, but we were talking about the themes. That's, it's got the deepest, the story has the deepest themes in any of the movies. It has some of the best character development moments, and it has the go-to plot twist of any movie in cinema history. I am your father.
Luke, I'm your father. Yeah.
Plot twist in cinema history. Just because we've grown up, like, even you've heard of Luke, I am your father and stuff like that. Like, it's a part of our culture, but like when that movie came out, it was the biggest bomb drop on an audience, like in recent memory for them. So like in the context of like movie twists, it's super quotable. It has great. It has probably the best score of all of the movies. Episode 6 kind of rides the coattails of episode 5 in a lot of the score as well. It's got great character moments. It's got a lot of tension, and it wasn't afraid to have a negative ending either. That's why I consider Empire Strikes Back to be the best Star Wars movie.
That's a hot take, man. That's a hot take. That is a hot take. I think there's 2 movies better than it.
We'll get into it when we get
to it. We'll definitely get into it. But I do think this is one of my favorite ones from there. But I don't want to be a person that lives in the moment. But I really want to say, because last time I was way wilding. I was giving that thing a 9, and I was way too high. So I'm trying not to give everything a 9 now. But I'm going to give it, like, I'm still going to give it 8.5 or 9, only because I feel like there's a movie better than it. Actually, two movies probably, I think, better than it.
Dude, wait till you hear my second and third favorites, okay? Like, let's... I'm not going to give my, like... I'll give it away on this one just because I feel like Empire Strikes Back is just, like, it's such an accomplishment in cinema and just an accomplishment in, like, the Star Wars universe. But I have some interesting opinions about the prequels as well. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's really going to be fun, dude. But, yeah, this movie, 8.59 is a great score, and I can totally understand why you wouldn't consider it the absolute best of the movies, because it does relies on the past movie, obviously, for setup, and it leads into the next movie. It's not necessarily considered a standalone movie. But as far as, like, themes and as far as, like, the production value, as far as storytelling, I feel like it's the best.
Wow. It's a great story. I definitely agree. So, like I said, it's a hot take. So take all your hot takes. If you disagree with any of these hot takes, okay, definitely you can definitely do a voice note on the Anchor app. Let us know how you feel about the ratings that we've done, what we've done so far in the series. We, especially me, I am very new to the Star Wars universe and the culture and all those different things. And definitely, man, help me as I'm getting on this journey of becoming a huge Star Wars fan, because trust me, I did not know I was going to love it as much as I do. All right. I did not know that. So yeah, man, it's great. It's awesome. And is there anything else you want to leave the people before we go?
Watch Star Wars. It's good for you, man. It's good. It's a good movie. It's a good story, man. It's good for you. It's on Disney Plus. Just go watch it.
Yes, man. This is not an ad for Disney Plus, but go get it, okay? Now, if Disney Plus wants to give us, you know, ad money for
this, I'll take some of that Disney money.
We'll take some of that Disney money, okay? I will be saying Disney, Disney, Disney all day long, every day, okay?
As long as Star Wars is on there, I'm like, okay, yeah, go watch it. It's the most convenient. But yeah, I just want to thank you, Shelton, for the opportunity to do this podcast with you again. It's always fun to talk about movies, talk about Christianity, talk about football, talk about Star Wars. It's always just a good time to talk to you, dude. And I'm glad that you chose me to do this, kind of special edition podcast with you.
No problem. There's no one else that I would want to do this with. Okay. So thank you for being willing, man. Really do, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you. All right. So guys, this is another installment of the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. You've listened to this podcast. You're like, man, that guy is weird. You're absolutely right. Listen to this podcast. You're like, man, he really is a pastor's kid, putting all of those illustrations about the Bible and Star Wars. You're absolutely right as well. This is the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. Thank you for listening.